Hello, everyone. This is the Close Encounters podcast, and I'm your host, Violet Webster, and today we're speaking with...
Leonard Sussman from Fine and Performing Arts at Baruch.
Yes, so he's the... are you the department head of the photography?
I'm the deputy chair for art. The department's split in three areas. We have art, music, and theater.
So. Oh, nice, nice. So... today we're just going to be talking about his creative technique, how he sort of came into photography, and any big projects. So word around town is that you're retiring recently. Are you going to be retiring?
I am. This is my last semester.
How does that make you feel?
Actually, I feel good about it. I've been here 40 years.
Wow.
And I was on sabbatical last year, and I photographed in Antarctica and the South Georgia Islands. I photographed in Greece. I photographed in Patagonia. I photographed in Italy. And I photographed back in the place I've really been working the last 5 years, in Svalbard in the high Arctic. So I did a ton of work. So I'm not feeling like, what am I going to do after I retire? The other side is I love the students. I won't miss the bureaucracy that much, as I'm sure any student at Baruch would know better than I probably. So, yeah, I'm excited about it.
So, like, as a teacher, has there been anything really significant that you've learned or picked up from specific students or projects?
I mean, I think you, particularly in critiques, you always learn from students.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do a critique with the class, a class critique, I always say, feel free to disagree with me. And I'll say if I think that the point they've made is valid, I'm always willing to back down and say, you're right. And I, of course, I learned stuff from that. Plus, students do many different kinds of work, some very different from what I do, which also is great. And you learn from that. Plus, you learn just the process of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you new ideas.
Yeah. Like specific, photos that have really jumped out at you as being really interesting over the years or experiences.
That's hard.
Yeah?
It's really hard. I mean, I have students who have gone on and stuck with photography. I mean,
mm-hmm.
at Baruch, the majority of the students are photography minors, or they're in the graphic communications track of the business communications major. So a lot of them will be, quote, working in the field. But it's really hard to point to us, for me at least, to point to a specific photograph.
Yeah, or like not even in class, but like you said, they've gone on to do amazing things. Have you seen any journeys, with students really doing anything after leaving your class? Is that interesting?
Yes, but
them?
I'm terrible on names, so I'm to
oh,
be
yeah,
honest.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I see stuff on Instagram, or I see stuff on the web. But on it, it's really hard
to remember names.
My students laugh at me for that. So. And I don't think it's a part of getting old. It's just the way my brain works.
Yeah, I mean, really going back into old memories, do you want to start with first getting into photography, like how you started that?
Sure. I grew up in California, in San Francisco. And when I was in high school, I started rock climbing. And eventually, I was climbing in Yosemite. And Angel Adams actually had a concession there that was called Best Studios, and anyone could go there. You could go there and buy film. You could have film developed, and I kind of started shooting then. And plus, his work was there on the walls. It was inspiring. You could buy prints for $5. Unfortunately,
$5
signed. Editions
what?
Of 100. Unfortunately, I didn't have the $5, or I would have retired a long time ago. But and actually, when I graduate, a nice thing about San Francisco, I actually don't miss living there, but a really nice thing is you really have easy access to mountains and coast. And when I graduated from high school, two other guys and I borrowed someone's car and spent 2.5 weeks driving up the coast to the Olympic Peninsula in Washington,
mm-hmm.
Which is really one of the first places I spent real time photographing. And then we went up to Vancouver and across British Columbia to Alberta, down through Glacier, the Grand Tetons, and then back. And all of the photograph, the camera was sort of lousy. The stuff.
Oh, what
didn't
were you shooting
out.
On?
Oh, it was just. I have no idea. It was a camera I'd bought it used at a camera store in San Francisco, and I think the lens just didn't focus that well.
Oh.
I still have some of the slides, but.
Oh, so it was film you started with, doing all of that
in
really cold work.
In 1974, yes. Excuse me, 1964, yes, it
oh
was film.
Oh, my God. How does film react in such cold weather? How does the
Well,
chemical?
So we're talking about Antarctica and mm-hmm. Svalbard, which is where I've been working mostly the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's really far north. It's closer to the North Pole than the Arctic Circle. Unfortunately, it hasn't been that cold. The coldest I've been in there was when I was there in late winter 2015, and we camped in about 10 degrees. I mean, really all you do then, I had a good bag that actually had pretty good insulation in it. I didn't buy it for that, but I never had a camera stop working there. From the batteries, and you always keep, you have lots of extra batteries.
Mm-hmm.
You keep them inside your pocket to keep them warm. So,
yeah, I was going to ask because I guess whenever I shoot in, like, it's usually below 0 degree weather, the battery's gone.
Yeah.
So you just have to keep spares. Is that usually what you do to combat that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually generally travel with about 6 spares.
6. Wow.
And I didn't have to do it this last time, but the previous time I actually had a little solar charger that I could use to recharge the batteries.
Oh, yeah.
And since in the summer it's 24-hour sun, you could leave it outside by the tent and it would recharge.
Exactly.
It worked great.
And, yeah, getting back to that first trip you were talking about, so you're using film, and was the
Wait,
lens
no,
also?
Well, no, my first trip to the cold places, it's all been digital.
Oh, so not your first trip
My first
through
photography
Canada.
For the first 45 years
mm-hmm.
was black and white
mm-hmm.
film.
Oh, okay. And you said the lenses were really, were they freezing up, or was it just like the camera?
No, the only thing you have to be careful with is that when you come back inside, you'd want to keep the lens cap on until the camera comes to room temperature. It's better not to take out the cards, although I often do anyhow. They get a little damp, but they dry off. in terms of equipment, I mean, honestly, I really schlep a lot of weight. I shoot with a Nikon D810. I have a second body in case something happens, which I've had happen. And then I carry a 16 to 35, a 24 to 70, and a 70 to 200. It weighs a ton. Then you got batteries and I mean, when I get on the plane, it feels like the camera bag should be the suitcase, but it's not.
Right, right.
And I usually do have a laptop with me so I can download, and I back up. I usually have 2 external drives, so I back up 3 places.
Mm-hmm.
What I was going to say happened in 2018 when I was in Antarctica. The sea's really rough. I mean, it's one of the worst seas in the world. And we were going from the Falklands or Malvinas to the South Georgia Islands, which most people haven't heard of, but they're unbelievable, heavily glaciated, amazing wildlife. The night before, we were told we had to close the curtains in our cabins because they didn't want bird strikes. And so I put the 70 to 200 on, was on the camera. I put it down on the bed, got up to close the curtain, and the next thing I saw was the lens was one place, the body was another. I freaked, of course, because that was really when I was going to start photographing. And it had ripped ripped the mount out of the camera, which in this case happened to be lucky because I was able to get everything off. And then I shot with my second body, but
so it just ripped the.
It literally, yeah. It hit. I guess I didn't see that happen. I just heard it, and then the body and the lens were in 2 different places.
So a bird bomb, like a bird.
No,
coming.
No, no. You have we you have to the South Georgia Islands in particular have very strict protocols about protecting wildlife and basically protecting the island from all kinds of intrusion. You have to. You go through baths with your shoes. You literally sometimes have to pick out any kind of seeds or anything in the Velcro on your jacket.
Wow.
But I was just lowering a curtain so that, because bird, you know, I want bird strikes on the windows. And That was when it happened. But it worked out well.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing trip.
So. Yeah, I bet. And how does conservation, you were talking about, they were making sure the island was okay, but a lot of your pictures in Antarctica, you're saying it's not as cold as it used to be. Do you center a lot of your photography around messages of conservation?
Well, the Antarctic I haven't been in, but it was relatively warm. In Svalbard, in the Arctic where I've been, this last trip was running 6 to 8 degrees Celsius over normal. So it's really scary. I mean, when you go to a glacier front, there's a lot of calving, great for a photographer, not great for anything else. It's scary. And I think I've been there 6 times, and you don't see so much direct evidence because that kind of requires fixing cameras and watching glaciers retreat if they in fact are, which some are, some aren't. But basically, I see this as this unbelievably amazing, wonderful place. I love it. And so in terms of conservation, in terms of protecting the wildlife, protecting the coast, it's a really important thing to me. My photographs, again, it's not a direct message. It's a more of an indirect message about this needs all to survive. And I'm sort of looking towards working more with some conservation organizations. I'll know nothing at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have a lot of time to create those sort of relationships.
Yeah, I do have a lot of time. I will, and I still do have a lot of time. So for me, I mean, like, I've always loved the outdoors, and I just feel what's happening in terms of climate, in terms of other things in this country, and the outdoor are really, sorry there.
Yeah, they
it's
need
really,
to be
it's really scare, scary.
Brought attention to.
I went on a hiking trip with my youngest son 2 summers ago in Utah. And the main park we went to was Capitol Reef, and the Slot Canyons are unbelievably beautiful. And then we went through Grand Staircase Escalante, which is a national monument that has recently been reduced in size by, I believe, 90%. I mean, there's so little left that's been preserved, so
right.
Why not keep it?
Right, yeah. And, yeah, I guess when it comes to shooting situations, you've been to some, you know, maybe not coldest places, but when it comes to shooting situations, what have been some of the scariest or most difficult that you would say shooting situations you've been through or projects?
I mean, I don't think I've been there. I don't think I've really been in what I would call frightening situations. But in the Arctic, I'm on an 18-meter, 62-foot-long boat, so you can have pretty rough seas. Never have felt like I was in danger. We've had a lot of bear sightings. Once on one trip, this was in 2017, we started a hike, and we were going to be climbing up a ridge, and someone looked up and saw on a patch of ice, they saw a bear. So
a grizzly?
No, it's only polar bears.
Oh, yeah.
So we started moving down, and bears, at least in short bursts, can move at 30 miles an hour.
Right,
So we backed away and got back to we were on Zodiacs, which are, you know, inflatable boats. But the bear was there pretty soon.
Yeah.
It's, you know, great to see it, great to be close. I didn't see it when I was taking the photograph, but I have a picture of this bear basically with what looks like a Frisbee in his mouth, and it turns out it's like a coffee can lid, so it's really depressing. It's unbelievable how much garbage, even way up there.
And
it floats everywhere. There's, you know, a lot of fish line, a lot of net, plastic stuff, and just regular plastic garbage. It's really horrible. In Svalbard, a couple times a year, the residents go out on these boat trips and actually collect refuse, and they collect a lot, tons.
Wow. And what do they do with it? Do they just bring it to their...
Well, they bring it to the town. I don't know whether it's offloaded on boats or, right, or where right. it goes. I don't. It's not burned, as far as I know.
And but. Are a lot of the is a lot of the trash that you see that far north exactly, or is it mostly from like fishing trash, or is it landfill trash that you see get that far up there?
I mean, it's a mix. You see plastic right. containers. You see all any. I mean, you don't see, you know, biological garbage, but you see, you know, plastic containers, metal things, just regular garbage we see.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of tons of plastic bottles, and you see, you know, the plastic that holds together six packs of beer, which are really dangerous because birds get trapped in them.
Right, they just get straight.
Yeah, and they die.
Yeah, yeah, and so you were saying you were shooting on a boat?
Right. So so this last trip, and I've on this small boat, I've been on it two other times. For this last time was 11 days. Right. So you shoot from the boat. So what I figured, I shoot a lot with the 70 to 200 because it's a huge, it's immense there. So you're always in a way narrowing down. So I've worked out ways to do it. You can't use a tripod. So I shoot at a very fast shutter speed. Luckily, many of the things are far enough away that everything comes out really sharp. And I print as large as 40 by 60. So, and those even those images hold up pretty well.
And do you, I guess when it comes to like shooting times, because you have to shoot at such a high shutter speed, do you have to just shoot within certain hours of the day to get enough light?
Up there, 24 hours a day.
Only four.
24.
Oh, it's 24. It's all, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's from from late April until roughly the 22nd of August, the sun doesn't set.
So, yeah, that is a lot of shooting time.
It's a lot of shooting time. And
yeah.
The thing is, it's not that hard to sleep, but... On the other hand, if you're moving, most of the time we don't travel at night. We don't travel for too many hours because there's only one captain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's times when you are trying to make distance and you get to a place and it doesn't matter if it's 3 a.m. You're up and out. Everybody's up.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
I just
yeah.
love it.
Yeah. Boat photography. And so other than... I guess, you know, wildlife shooting. Do you, especially in New York, have you done a lot of other types of shooting or?
Well, let me finish a little bit about that. So I'm not
I'm
not mainly a wildlife photographer.
Okay, yeah.
I do landscape much more.
Mm.
And I didn't fit the part that I'd say hard. Some of the hiking is pretty challenging. The most difficult hike on the last trip was about a 10-mile hike with 3,500 feet of climbing.
Round trip,
3,500 feet of climbing,
right, right.
But a lot of it on this very loose rock, so we're always balancing.
You're always scrambling.
It's not quite scrambling, but difficult, but unbelievably beautiful.
I bet, yeah. And
so you were going to ask about other projects.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I've done a lot of different things. I'd say landscape is really my passion, but... in the 1980s, relatively recently after I came here, I did a project doing street photography in Lower Manhattan, which I think was pretty good. I photographed a lot in Italy. I did a book on Sardinia, but I also did quite a bit of street scene or people scenes there. My father was a bus driver in San Francisco, so I always liked transportation. So when I first came here, I did a big project on subways, not about people. And I did etchings as well.
Right, etchings. Yeah, I wanted to get into that a little bit, too, if you don't mind, if we do a bit of a segue into that.
Don't mind.
So I was looking through it. Etchings was drawings as well as photography paired together, would you say?
So the portfolio was etchings and photographs. Etchings are done on a zinc or copper plate.
Oh, so those were scratched in?
Well, basically the way it's done is you put a wax resist on a plate.
Mm-hmm.
I won't get too technical. And then you do your drawing, and then it goes in an acid bath to actually etch the metal away. And then you make your prints by inking the plate with a very thick ink, wiping the surface clean, and then you put a paper that you've soaked in water to make it more pliable, blotted, and then you put that down on the plate. It goes through a press under very high pressure, and then when it comes out, you've got an etching. It embosses the lines and the edges. So I did pair that, which I liked.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's, yeah, that sounds like a very, like, you know, I guess labor-intensive process.
The whole that particular project was very labor-intensive. I decided to do a portfolio, and so I printed 35 sets of the 10 photographs, the 5 etchings, a little, not really a preface, but a title page, basically a table of contents. The only thing I had done was I had the boxes made. So it was a huge project. It was massive.
Yeah,
and then all the prints had to be mounted on mat board. I didn't have to do that with the etchings, but I made 35. I sold enough to kind of make double my money, and I've traded portfolios with my camera dealer for equipment. So it worked pretty well. And then I also did a project, a pretty big project on transportation in Berlin, mostly, again, focusing on the subways, but again, fine art oriented. It's not really documentary work with people but a lot about the spaces and
the architecture.
Right, the architecture. It was, I started in 2003, and there were still some of the stations. The S-Bahn were the trains that went through the old East Germany. And some of those stations still had remnants of from that time, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And they hold a lot of history. Have you been to the Transit Museum in Brooklyn?
Oh, sure.
Oh, that's like kid, such a cool museum.
Yeah, been there. All my kids have been there.
Yeah, it's such a classic.
Like, when my youngest son was little, where I live in Brooklyn, we could go down to Smith and Mine Street. When he was 2 years old, we'd go down there and watch the trains coming in. He loved it.
Mm. And I guess, like, you were saying you were bringing attention to the spaces in the subways. Did you shoot after you did the etchings, or did you make the...
No, the etchings all came after the
photo. You were inspired
or
by the photos.
Along with them, but...
Right.
And that work, those photographs, I were all 2.25 medium format, and that all was done on a tripod.
Yeah, so you have to set up the tripod in the subway. How was that technically?
Only thing technical was getting a permit to do it.
Oh, a permit.
Because I was new in New York, and and they said you have to have a permit, but we're not giving any permits. It was very New York. And then there was a neighbor of mine who was a writer, and he knew someone.
Oh, really?
Then I got the permit.
Nice.
I'd still always get stopped by the transit police, but they wouldn't stop me from photographing. They'd want to see the permit.
Right, right.
So it was fun. I mean, you know, they have a reason for that. They don't want people down there photographing with a flash and as someone's coming in. Of course, with iPhones now, it's basically everybody photographs everywhere.
Right, right. And you're saying you were getting into street photography as well a little bit too, kind of working back into that conversation?
I mean, I did quite a lot. In the lower Manhattan, I worked on that for about 3 years.
Oh, like downtown or like midtown?
Wall Street area.
Oh, okay.
Really Wall Street area. And I continued that as I was photographing in Italy. So,
and were you also bringing more attention to the space around Wall Street and the architecture? Like
they're really about
the subway?
They're really about the space. Yeah,
right.
They really, yeah.
It's
because there's so much.
So old down there, too.
Well, it's old. It's new. It's also the kind of light you get is really amazing because you'll get light bouncing off of windows that illuminates things kind of from two different... It's almost like you've got two suns because sometimes it's backlit and frontlit without using artificial things to do that.
Right. It's a great way to experiment, I bet.
Yeah, it was really fun. I really liked it.
Yeah, nice. And so... So I guess getting into, because you do teach a lot of digital... Or sorry, you teach a lot of film classes. Do you also teach digital as well, or do you mainly focus on film?
I teach both, and right now we only have, photojournalism, I have taught photojournalism, but I'm not teaching it now, so that's now a bit, and when I taught it, it was film-based, now it's pretty much digital. I teach the digital class, that we only have one digital class, and I actually started teaching that in 2001 with a Nikon Coolpix 5500, which is a 5-megapixel camera.
Wow.
I've exhibited work from that, and I could go as large as 11, 14 with a lot of images, and they'd hold up pretty well even at that.
Yeah.
And so now the camera, that was 5. What I shoot with is 36 megapixels. It's like, it's a different world.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like both. I like both. I mean, mm-hmm. The way I work digitally, I pretty much am using Lightroom or Photoshop or both as a digital darkroom. So I'm not compositing images. It's just not what I do. And I work with kind of a muted, generally kind of a muted color pack.
I don't like, personally,
I'm not big on overly saturated images where the color looks like a Hidden Valley Ranch dressing ad.
Yeah. And I saw a lot of your photos also have a very, you know, not a huge amount of contrast in the sense that you see a lot of detail, you know, in a lot of the, I guess I have like a specific image of like one of the icebergs that had a lot of veins, or I don't know if that's a specific term, but you can see a lot of the detail on it. Do you mainly work?
I like working with that. Yeah, I like that kind of muted palette. Mm-hmm. So that they're not really veins with the blue. The blue has to do with the pressure on the ice. Mm-hmm. Then when you've got black striations or lines, that's from the glacial debris. You know, a glacier moves plastically. It flows because of the huge weight at the bottom, and that just grinds up rock. And then when it basically spits it out, which is at the glacial face, it's often you've got these black lines, and I really like that. They become very abstract and really interesting.
Yeah, so have you always kind of worked for, like, have you ever gotten into, like, a more high contrast shooting style with film or anything?
I'm pretty dull. I mean, my work in Sardinia, again, I used the zone system, which was kind of developed by Angela Adams. So I actually like shooting midday, which is really harsh light. A lot of photographers only want to shoot early early or late in the day. I mean, I do that too, but I like that kind of harsh quality of the light too, but it's usually kind of defined by the situation as opposed to me pushing it up.
Mm. And do you, I guess when it comes to film versus digital, do you find certain situations or shooting styles do better with one or the other?
I mean, I think digital gives you a remark. I mean, shooting
the
raw,
detail, yeah.
Shooting raw, and gives you a remarkable range of your controls.
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of exposing, when you shoot raw, the adjustments you can make in shadows or highlights to bring them more in the line with what you want is remarkable.
Yeah, definitely. And with film, do you find it to be more like abstract, or like where do you find it can really apply or shine technically?
I think it's just a beautiful medium.
Mm-hmm.
There's such different ways of working, so that shooting film, since I worked on a tripod largely, I mean, I also shot with, you know, 35, but largely on a tripod, you shoot less material, so you're editing as you shoot. When you shoot digitally, I don't shoot massive numbers of images, but of course you shoot many more. Part of it is being up there where I've been going. You know, it's not that easy to get back. You can't go back the next day. And even if you go back another time, it may be very different. Then the difficulties you have to edit, and you've got to be really brutal. You know, and so I go through many, many layers of editing. I often make, after I've done an initial edit, I'll often make small test prints that I print out to look at and then try and choose from them. Then I'll make prints that are a standard size for me is 17 by 22. And then from those, I'll eventually choose what I'm going to print. I print 24 by 36. And then from that, even larger, though I don't do tons of prints, much larger.
Do you do a lot of scans of your film as well to, like, save them if you have very old formatted ones?
I haven't done a lot, but I've been doing it. I have a pretty good scanner, and I get great quality when I print. You know, I print on an Epson 9900, and you have a you have a black and white mode where you're it's actually using all the colors. So you can really get really subtle if you want a slightly warmer tone or a cooler tone. So it's great for that. But I think the prints hold up. I print on matte paper, and I've printed my film-based photography has been printed on matte paper for years. I like that quality. Part of that, I think, comes from being a printmaker because I like the feel of the image being in the paper instead of sitting on the surface. You give up a certain, you don't get blacks that are quite as rich as you get from a glossy because the reflectance is different, but I'm kind of willing to let that go.
So you said you used to do prints a while, did you do them a while ago? Or
print, well,
or
the
printmaking?
Yeah, my MFA is in printmaking. The etchings, mm-hmm. yeah, etchings are prints.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And did you mainly do that here in New York, or where was, did you?
I did both. I learned photography. I mean, I was an art major, so I was a printmaking major at Berkeley. But I also did printing and photography at this little student-run facility on campus that anyone could come in and use. But the guy who was running it when I was there, at least at the beginning, was an amazing person to learn from. This is photography, not printmaking. And there was this crew of people that every day at lunchtime would be in there tacking prints up and then getting brutalized. No, it was rough. It was tough critiques. It was,
mm-hmm.
No one ever said something was good unless they thought it was good. But you kind of walked away sometimes with your tail between your legs.
Yeah, did you learn a lot about, I guess, like, yeah, what did you pick up in those critiques that really gave you direction at that time?
I learned both that technically, the technique's important because if you can't get out or down on the print what you want, you can't express yourself. But just in terms of how you put it, whatever that means, how you put an image together is what I learned. Some of that's intuitive. And I work largely intuitively, so I don't. There were never rules like, you know, people talk about the rule of thirds, or I just never taught that or never really considered that much, because whenever you have a rule, there's all the exceptions
exactly,
that prove the
exactly.
rule to be wrong.
So you find composition comes to you very naturally in, like, balancing an image?
Yeah, I think it does. And when we have a critique in class, I try and do it in that kind of way. It's whether I think in the image, whether the image holds together, not whether it's following some rules.
Mm-hmm. And do you find, like, I guess it's kind of hard to exemplify that without an image, you know, in front of you, but are there any sort of things that really jump out as you to you as when you're looking at an image?
The image or when I'm shooting?
Or like an image, I guess, like in post, like when you're looking at an image.
I think that's pretty hard to answer. You know, one of the things I've found is, like, when you first go to the Arctic or the Antarctic, every iceberg you see, you have to photograph.
Right, right.
And after a while, you realize that everyone doesn't have to be photographed. It's also, you know, what I'm trying to do there with my photography, and what I think the challenge of these places for me, is that I'm trying to make really strong photographs of places that are, they may be kind of austere or barren, but they're incredibly beautiful. And making a really strong work is very different than taking a photograph that's of something beautiful. If you understand.
Yeah, trying to exemplify, like, the gravity or the, you know, not just size, but also importance of an image rather than its aesthetics?
No, not that. What I mean is that I think a job of an artist in general is if you're doing something that's a visual kind of subject from out there in the world, is how do you make a really strong photograph of something that's in that world that exists that may or may not be beautiful? So, for example, if my students are photographing a sculpture, an artist has already made that sculpture. It's
right.
A good sculpture. It's not a good sculpture. But how did they make a photograph that becomes interesting as this two-dimensional photograph that's on a piece of paper as of a three-dimensional object that's interesting in and above that it's a picture of a sculpture.
Right, and it's and using their own style, or it's...
Right, absolutely. And that's, I mean, that to me, that's a challenge as an artist is, you know, taking a picture of a glacier means, may mean I just, or of a iceberg, means I have a picture of this beautiful thing, but that's the end of it. How do I, and I have photographs of some icebergs that I think are really strong as images, but that's different than just having a picture of this beautiful scene.
Right, right. Yeah, and I guess, yeah, so other than you said landscapes, really, you prefer doing landscapes and a lot of...
It's what I'm particularly drawn to.
Yeah, but and why do you find that? Do you find that it's very visually compelling, or...?
I think it's visually compelling. I, as I said, I've always loved the outdoors. I
mean, yeah,
I
grew, the journey
I grew up in I grew up in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco when I was a kid. I lived half a block from it, and one of the things that was great about the Bay Area is you could be on Mount Tamalpais, you could be on the coast and places to hike very easily, and so that I think really helped form me or informs my work. And also, I think the landscape of Northern California informs a lot of what I did after that, which particularly in Italy and Sardinia. Sardinia landscape is often, there's similar qualities. And I did work in Provence and Southern France that also part of that is it's San Francisco, the climate isn't, the Bay Area has basically a Mediterranean climate. San Francisco is always cold, but and the landscape reflects that.
It's very, I guess, extreme. Is it? I guess it's like mountainous there, technically?
Well, San Francisco, the city itself, is very hilly, but, you know, you can begin the Sierra Nevada, which are big mountains, in 2.5 or 3 hours. But just going north, you're in Mount Tamalpais, which is, it's about 2,500, 2,600 feet, but it rises right up. Right up,
yeah,
the
it's a
ocean.
Very steep ascent.
The mountain, it's a steep mountain, but it rises right out of the ocean. There's all kinds of different hikes. You can do easy hikes or steep hikes.
So you get that dramatic, you know, sea, mountain.
Right, sea and land.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. And did you also do a lot of, you said you were really into rock climbing. Did you do a lot of rock climbing photography?
No, a little bit of rock climbing. I mean, I did climbing. I did some pretty hard, not really long climbs. But at a certain point, I decided I wasn't willing to die doing it. I don't mean die or fall on a climb. I mean, it's not what I wanted to devote my life to. So I moved on.
Yeah, you just made the decision. Yeah.
Was because the guys I knew, that's what they did. And that's
like they live and breathe it. They live out of a van.
Exactly. And I just,
it's the commitment.
It was that. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, like, do you find photography to be that sort of outlet for you personally? It's like, it's your rock climbing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you'd live out of a van to do photography?
Sure. I mean, I've lived out of a car. I've, you know, lived in a tent for months at a time.
Yeah, to like be mobile and always be shooting something new.
When I'm in the Arctic, you're either traveling by boat or by foot. The second time I was there, which was the winter, I did about 500 miles on a snowmobile in a week, which was intense.
Yeah, I bet.
Intense.
With all that equipment?
With the equipment, of course, you don't have to have it on your back then.
Yeah,
but
that's nice. Yeah.
But just, you know, you're on glacier. It's not like you can just play around very much because you have to be aware of crevasses. You know, you've got someone leading you, but it's intense. It was tiring, but
and with the air difference and stuff like that, it's probably always kind of tiring.
Yeah, and if it's 12 or 15 degrees out and you're going 30 miles an hour on a snowmobile, I mean, you're dressed warmly, but
wind chill is insane.
Yeah, you can get pretty cold.
Right.
But it was, again, it was just wonderful.
Right, right.
And we hooked up with some scientists we were in the at the Barents Sea edge, and they were oceanographers researching algae under the ice. So that was really cool.
Did you get photos of them studying? And
I did photograph them. No, it was just we went out and looked at what they were doing, what their research was. We went out on the ice. They were from France and Belgium, and I've stayed connected with them.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. Yeah,
and I've also connected. I met a geophysicist in Svalbard in the Arctic who's a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I had an exhibit in conjunction with a big science. It's called what's it called? It's a meeting of Arctic scientists. So I had an exhibit as part of that, and I'm trying to kind of move some of my stuff, connect it to the sciences.
So yeah, so you're photographing these glaciers, and it's pairing with the information that they're gathering.
Well, I'm trying to do that. I haven't really. I can't say I've really done that.
No, yet, yeah, but like in you know, in the sense of how you'd be pairing the two, you know, in
right.
For example, I guess
hoping maybe I'll get out on a research boat in the Arctic in the next year or two, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I guess also getting into digital and getting your work really out there for new projects. Do you ever rely on social media in any way to advertise your work?
I have a website. I use Instagram.
You have Instagram? Do you want to drop your Instagram on the podcast?
Sure. It's just Leonard Sussman Photography.
Leonard Sussman Photography. Yeah, we always have like a...
Okay. you know, I even... My gallery director, she actually had someone run a workshop for old people for Instagram. I mean, the problem for me, and you know, and I'm pretty adept on a computer and figure out any problem. The problem for me is a lot of what I do just looks huge things.
It's too compact,
and
on a
3x3-inch screen, it's really hard. But I also know it's what a lot of movers and shakers are looking at to see your work. So
yeah,
you have to do it.
Have you ever experimented with different framing on Instagram?
No, like... I have to do that. It's well, I mean, it's also, you only have so much time for doing things in life. And the woman who ran the workshop was great. She said, you want other people to spend time on Instagram. You shouldn't spend more than 10 minutes a day.
Exactly.
And she's right. But, you know, working just... You know, getting the right material to have people want to look and the right hashtags just takes time to build
that
up.
It's definitely a very malleable form of social media. Yeah, one of the best for photographers, in my opinion. But yeah, definitely. You can also do a lot of different formatting with like just not even putting the whole image on one post. You can just blow.
Right, I know you can make a whole window of images, and I know. I see those out there. I haven't played with it.
But, yeah, you have a lot of time for that, too, now. And
Soon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much for going over everything and your technique and everything like that. Is there any final words that you want to give to up-and-coming Brook photographers or anything?
Keep doing it.
Just keep getting out there?
You know, every photographer I've ever known, if they're asked what's the best thing to do to become better, lots of photographs.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much.
My
pleasure.
Thank you
for being on our show. And, tune in next time. Thank you so much.
Sure.